Life is full of hassles, way more than you might think, certainly more than when you think when you're growing up. So you've got to plan your future. You've got to do financial planning. You've got to get insurance. But to get peace of mind, you've got to make sure your family is legally protected. So where do you turn, and where have I turned in the past, for affordable legal protection you can trust? LegalZoom.com. That's right. Our friends at LegalZoom.com have been there for over 12 years, helping Americans get personalized wills, powers of attorney, living trust, real estate documents, and more. LegalZoom also helps start and maintain businesses with incorporation and LLC filings, trademarks, and copyrights. Time-saving services were developed by a team of experienced attorneys, and LegalZoom takes care of you from start to finish. And then they follow up on you, too. You'll get emails throughout the year telling you your certain things are due and are you paying attention to things. It's quite a service. LegalZoom documents have been accepted by courts and government agencies in all 50 states. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but they can connect you to an attorney and provide self-help services at your specific direction. For even more savings, enter Drew, D-R-E-W, in the referral box at checkout. If you're a parent or entrepreneur, don't forget, don't wait any longer. Call or visit LegalZoom.com and protect what is yours.
This is Corolla Digital.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dr. Drew Podcast. My guest today, Michael Lohan. Michael, are you there?
Dr. Drew, how are you?
Hey, man. Good to talk to you. I look forward to this. Michael Lohan is on the Twitter handle at Michael J. Lohan, L-O-H-A-N. Website, he's representing a chemical dependency treatment center, LukeInstitute.com. Also,
Lukens, L-U-K-E-N-S.
Got it. LukenInstitute.com. Also, the Treasure Coast Recovery Center. They also have TreasureCoastRecoveryCenter.com. Michael, it sounds like you're on a speakerphone. Can you put yourself up to the receiver there? It's very weird, echoey sound.
Is that better?
That's way better. Thank you so much.
Way better.
All right, sir. So you are in Florida now? Is that where you are?
Yeah, I live in Boca Raton, but I'm working with a bunch of different treatment centers down here.
And what are you doing? Tell me about them.
Well, I found this one. Actually, I'm doing some referral work here. I still do interventions and refer people. But the reason why I'm working here is because Dr. Drew, quite honestly, I never knew how to treat or address my problems in the past, and that's why they were kind of ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized one thing from you, that you have to treat the trauma, not the addiction.
Well, you've got to do both. You miss any – addicts are complicated, and you miss any part of what they're dealing with, and the addiction will take advantage of that and recur. So
right,
go.
But the thing was, you brought me back to where my initial trauma was, and I didn't know if it started at that age, but I did realize something, that every time something similar in my life came up, that's when I went back to using.
What was the original trauma?
Yes.
What was it?
It was with my dad,
yeah.
Being the oldest kid and my father being not physically abusive, but verbally abusive.
Well, wait, now, Mike, I have a recollection. I hope you don't mind me. Do you mind talking about this stuff?
No, not at all.
Because I have a very vivid memory of you describing your father and you nearly murdering each other. And when Bob and I brought it to your attention, you're like, yeah, we live in Staten Island. What are you going to do? This is how everyone behaves. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. You guys nearly killed each other.
No, he did attack me. He did attack me.
And you broke a broom off and tried to stab him when he was in the pool. Remember that scene?
Yeah, he didn't get me, but
well,
yes,
you
he
almost
tried.
Killed him. That's why he didn't get you. That is traumatic, man. And when you're disconnected from the magnitude of a trauma like that, when a parent tries to kill a child and vice versa, that is profound. And then there's another scene in my head. These things are flashing back to me. I didn't experience them, Mike. I'm getting flashbacks of you running up the driveway because you
when I got his arm. What? Yes.
Very traumatic, man. It's not just being the oldest child and your dad being verbally abusive. You guys got into it.
Yeah, we did. I mean, it was sad, but, it's something that I didn't live with and I did experience, but I put it in the back of my mind and I think that has a lot to do with the other people in my family and how they're not addressing the things that really, really cause them to use.
What do you think those things are?
Well, for my daughter, for Lindsay, it was definitely abandonment from the divorce because that's when it all started.
Mm.
For Dina, I think it has to do with partly the divorce, but things that went on with her family, which, it's not my place to discuss what happened to her.
You bet.
But she,
and Dina, by the way, you know, people like to attack her in the press. She's a very nice woman, you know, and I know you had you really loved Dina. People don't quite get that piece.
No, I love Dina. She's the mother of my children. I feel sorry for her.
Right. She's struggling with stuff like a lot of people do. But she's actually, when you talk to her, she's really the cool person. You know what I mean? She's fun to talk to.
Oh, she's fun to talk to.
Well, she is. You know what I mean? But she's a good. She's not some kind of evil person. She's struggling like everybody, right? Whoop, your phone's going off.
No, you know, she struggles. She's not an evil person. I think that we all have that evil side to us. Mm. I mean, there's always good and evil beckoning on each shoulder all the time. But that's all about choices.
Yeah.
And those, you know, you can take the right path or the wrong path. And you know what? Look, I all think it's in your mind. It starts in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to cultivate it and you want to go with it, you can make a choice whether to follow that path or not. And I'm not perfect at that, believe me. But at least I'm aware of it.
Well, so set the scene of your family of origin, because I and if you don't mind me sprinkling a little bit of my own sort of experience of your family, because I had the good pleasure of meeting your sister, right, who lives in Vermont, and your aunt.
Yes, sir.
And your mom's sister, and your mom, and so I get a sense of that side of your family and how your mom struggles and worries and has anxiety about her entire. She personally worries every day about everybody with her genetic heritage, right?
She's
like a classic codependent, and she clings to that stuff. But tell me about this. Set the scene when you were growing up. Your dad did what, and your mom did what, and how?
My father was a bricklayer. He was a hard, hard working man. He thought it was okay to drink beer during, and I experienced this when I was a kid, going to his different job sites and things. And I actually worked with him at the age of 15, and, you know, even when I worked on Wall Street and he needed a guy, I would go and work with him. But all I ever saw was him and his guys starting to drink at 11 in the morning during their lunch break, and they had their six-pack or more of beer, and then after work it continued. But because they drank beer, they weren't alcoholics,
because
it wasn't liquor.
Of course.
And that was okay.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I never drank in high school and even in college. It wasn't until I got to Wall Street that I really started.
Did you see him do stuff drunk that bothered you?
Yeah, driving the car every single day.
Oof.
And not even get caught once.
Oof. And then you lived – Staten Island, was it? Is that where you lived?
Long Island.
Long Island. You went to Long Island. And sort of set the scene. And you had how many brothers and sisters? Your mom and your ethnic heritage and this kind of thing.
A sister, Kim, Kim is 2 years younger than me. Uh-huh. Never had an addiction problem. Had some medical problems, couldn't have any kids, and adopted one.
Mm.
She has a great job right now. My brother Scott is like the poster boy for all-American kid. Went to Brown University.
So he was
Ivy League.
You know, I'm sure you've studied alcoholic families. So he's the hero, and you're the scapegoat.
Yes.
Right. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
And then he's got a great, great job on Wall Street, and you know, stellar guy. As a matter of fact, if you look up Kevin Lohan on the internet, his son actually is going professional in hockey at the age of 18.
Cool.
And then my sister Carrie, who is I've never heard this girl curse or yell. Literally, never heard a curse or yell. Very rarely drinks. Has 4 kids. Actually, they said she couldn't have kids, and by the grace of God, when she got pregnant, they thought she was even going to die. But she got past that, and she's on her 4th kid right now. She's pregnant with about 6 months.
How did they perceive your family of origin stuff? Were you just the troublemaker fighting with your dad, and they couldn't understand why, or did they see the same stuff you saw?
No, because I was a protector. When my father came home, and he was drunk, and you know, getting pissed at my mother and screaming and yelling. I remember one instance where he was so screaming and throwing dishes and violent that everyone locked, my mother locked us into my bedroom.
Mm.
And my father was at the door. And I was about, I think it was about 17 or 18 at the time.
Mm.
I actually crawled out the window, went around in the house, and I tackled them so they could get out of the house and get in the car.
You have a history of crawling out windows.
Boy, you're full of jokes today now.
I'm just saying, traumas repeat themselves.
One thing about you is you always had a great sense of humor.
But they do, my friend. I'm not being facetious about it. I mean, really, we recreate the past in the present. I mean, that is.
I never thought of that.
And I see that in people. And this, you know, the things that are hidden from people, you know, the things we never see, are our patterns and our traumas and how they affect our choices and behaviors. As you said, you started this conversation that way. And I totally agree with you. And we repeat the past. When something is shattering and intense, we do it again and again and again. And magically, we recreate those circumstances where it's awfully similar, at least to the feeling and behavior of that past. That's a horrible experience you're describing. I mean, really awful.
Yeah, you know what? I learned something from you every time I talk to you. I never put those two things on a parallel. When I climbed out the window at the house, and then when I tried, it was an escape process. I tried to escape from it. And then the same thing with the hotel, trying to get away from things.
Yeah.
It's, you're amazing. I can't believe it.
But your dad, so you tackled your dad, and how did that all end up? How did that resolve?
They ran out in the car, and he was drunk, so he was kind of, you know. Yeah. That's why I kind of took advantage of the situation, like I did with his arm. Yeah. But I was still there, and they got out in the car, and I was able to run into the backyard. And I still remember running up to the barn. I was going to take one of the horses and ride away, but he didn't even pursue me.
And you were – did your family – so your two sisters, your brother, and your mom were with you in that bedroom. Did they see you as the protector, or were they mad at you for attacking your dad?
No, they actually looked at me as a protector, and I was always – you know, my brother Scott is 4 years younger than me, and he always played all the sports with us, and that's why he's such a great athlete. He was playing up in age with, you know, guys that were 4 years older.
Mm-hmm.
But they always looked up for me, and then when I had my problems and stuff, they kind of, you know, always questioned it. Like my parents kind of shielded them, especially my mother, from what was going on.
Your mom's a classic codependent, though, right?
Totally. Yeah. My father didn't even address it. He wouldn't even say anything. It wasn't until I was 22 years old. I remember the day I was going up to going out to the Hamptons, and I had some cocaine. I had an eight ball of cocaine that I was taking with me, and my parents found it in my room. And that's when my brothers and sisters first found out that I was into drugs. And I blamed someone else. It was someone else's I was bringing out to the Hamptons and the whole nine yards. And I got out of that one. But then when I was, as I got older, when I was 24 years old, it was kind of evident that I was having issues. And then I met Dina, and I stopped using because she was pregnant, and she stopped drinking. And then we got separated because I was charged with a criminal contempt case. And before I actually went to jail, I went on a run.
Hang on a second. Criminal contempt for what?
They said I was insider trading on Wall Street, but I wasn't insider trading. I just was trading for somebody. I didn't know they were trading offshore accounts. I thought it was a regular account, and I wouldn't tell. It was everyone knows it, Mark Rich.
So the contempt was you wouldn't reveal.
I wouldn't tell on it. No. But I held that in, and I didn't want to go to jail, and Dina didn't, she didn't know, I didn't know if she could handle it or not.
How old are your kids then?
Lindsay was 3, and Michael was 2, and Allie and Cody weren't born yet, but I got to the point where I went in my old, the same room that we were locked in my parents' house, and I was on a 3-day run doing coke and drinking. And I took out my .44 Magnum, and I put it to my head, and I told you about this. I pulled the trigger, and the gun didn't go off. And then I put it down on the table, and it did go off. And
Oof.
Within 24 hours, I was in Betty Ford.
This was, what year was this? This is about 20
years? 1989.
So I'm a little confused. You're on a 3-day run. You're in that horrible room. You're suicidal on a cocaine run, right? So who knows what you're thinking and intending.
Yeah.
You're not yourself. Go to Betty Ford. When did you go to jail?
I went to right after I got out of treatment. I turned myself into the feds.
And how long were you in jail for?
3 years.
And that was a very traumatic experience for you, too.
Yeah, it was, because when I first went in, I didn't know if Dina was going to stay with me or not. And by the grace of God, after I got sentenced and I got actually, it was only a year I was going to do. Originally, when they wanted to charge me with insider trading, it was a 15-year sentence based upon the amount of money.
Mm.
But they couldn't prove securities for an insider trading, so they only hit me with contempt. And I thought it was for 1 year, and that's when Dina came back.
Because she thought it was 1 year, too?
Yeah, but then when I was a week away from getting out, they brought me back to court, and I thought I was getting released, and they brought me back to court, and they asked me the same questions, and I didn't answer them again. So they said, okay, go back to jail for another year and figure it out.
Wow.
So I freaked out on my lawyer, and I said, what's going on here? And he said, Michael, in the state, they can only give you a year, but in the feds, they can give you 1 year, three times in a row.
Which is what they did.
Yeah, so I knew I was going to do another year, but Dina was faithful. Every single weekend, she came to visit me with the kids, and we got through it. And then I was out on supervised release, and I had 5 years in supervised release. I was 4 years and 2 months into it with only 8 months left, and that's when Lindsay was doing the Parent Trap in California. And she was in the hospital. Actually, one of the scenes was her riding horses, and she has horrible asthma, and she wound up with a bad asthma attack in an oxygen tent.
So California. She was hospitalized, and you were out in Napa or something, right?
Yeah. Napa Valley, and the next thing you know, you have a great memory. Anyway, so I said, I have to go to California, and my probation officer said, you just got back, and I said, she's in the hospital now, I'm not just going to visit, and he said, no, you can't go, and I said, I have to go, and he says, Mr. Lohan, you do what you have to do, and I'll do what I have to do, so I went, and they gave me another year in jail.
Oh, my God. So she's just on the heels of her completing that film, her dad gets carted off to prison again.
Again, and you know what? I thought I was doing the right thing to be there for my daughter, but I didn't. This is how I thought. I thought that it was okay. I was going to go and be there with her, realizing I would have gone to jail again. So could I have waited and see how things went in the hospital,
or sent Dina?
I'm going to go to jail for a year and be without them for a year. Which was worse?
How do they support themselves during all this? I mean, this is like years and years of stuff going down.
Yeah. I guess from the commodity exchange and stuff, and you know, some of the money that was, you know, I had aside. And
so you still had you had a saving still that sustained.
Yeah,
you guys.
People took care of her.
Did your mom and dad step up?
Absolutely, yeah. My mother
again,
and father, they bought her a car. My grandfather actually, because my mother's father was worth a lot of money. He started a spaghetti company, and then
that's too funny.
Yeah,
that's hysterical. But I want people to get a sense of your mom, because I have a very vivid sense of who she is. She's not ethnic, but has sort of an ethnic mentality, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Yeah. She's not, you wouldn't say, oh, that's an Italian woman, but she behaves like the matriarch of an Italian family. And she makes it her business to be up in everybody's stuff, but feels like personally responsible for everything. I could just tell that. I remember I was, you know, and her sister. Your aunt, was she a recovering person too? Is that my recollection right?
Yes, and she's been a therapist.
Yeah,
she's 40 years.
No, I get that she's an amazing person. I remember that. And and she, your therapist aunt is the one that sort of got out of the system and was sort of looked at as the oddball because she was treated and she started recovering and just was looking back at everybody going, oh, it's not so healthy in there. I think I'll stay out here. And your mom could not understand what was up with her. And your aunt said she's tried to help your mom a number of times. Because your mom's getting depressed. She's like depressed by the stress of handling everybody's shit. Does she feel Lindsay's sort of course personally?
She calls me. She's living, like you said, up in New Hampshire now. She
your aunt. No, I mean your mom. Is your mom carrying
mom.
Lindsay's thing?
Oh, my mom.
Sure, your aunt gets it. I know your aunt because it would be a great resource for you. She knows exactly
what to
do.
Yeah, my mom gets it from me because she's learned a lot. You know, even though she doesn't go to Al-Anon, I mean, there's a lot of things just in that short period of time on Celebrity Rehab that she brings up things like that. Like, you know, I can't be there and I can't do this and I shouldn't worry, but I do worry about Lindsay and what am I going to do? She doesn't call. And, you know, it's a lot of the things that she did with me, she disconnects from now.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, it's sort of. You're really supposed to disconnect with loving compassion. You know, you're supposed to keep that peace there, which is hard. It's hard to do both. People just get exhausted and they just disconnect. So let's talk about what pissed you off so much. If you want to, talk about what happened in court with Lindsay. I think you wanted to talk about
this,
right? Yeah.
Whatever you want to talk.
No, this is you. This is you. Because right? you were really angry about something that went down in court, and I don't think anyone ever heard what you were mad about. So,
and that's why I contacted you originally.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, I've been trying to get Lindsay into treatment and get her around the right people. And I had attorneys set up for her. An attorney stepped to the plate that I didn't agree with. The guy's got his own issues. His son is Lindsay's promoter, and he cared about money. Lindsay comes out of a rehab, and he puts her into a promotional gig out in Las Vegas promoting a vodka. That's the kind of people that we're dealing with.
Oh, boy.
So one thing led to another. I found out he was her attorney. And I wasn't very happy with it because he was telling Lindsay that she was going to just get home arrest or have to do community. And that was not the case because Mr. Terry White from the prosecutor's office was actually in touch with an attorney I hired. And it got to the point where I was in touch and still am in touch with Terry White. All Mr. White cared about...
Who is Terry White?
He's a city attorney
on
Lindsay's case.
Got it.
And Mr. White, all he cared about was Lindsay getting better. That's all he wanted was treatment. But Lindsay was... But Mr. Heller, her attorney, was telling her, don't worry about it. You're not going to have to go to jail. You don't have to go to treatment. You're going to get house arrest and so on and so forth.
So let's slow down here. So the city attorney that has been prosecuting her, is he the one from the beginning?
Yes, he is.
Once
it got to Santa Monica Court on the violation, he was prosecuting from the beginning of that part of the case.
Why hasn't he been able to talk some sense into her attorneys to help save her life and stop looking at this as a punitive criminal issue and look at it as a health issue? Why can't they do that?
Because he wants his client to be happy with him in the public eye, and it's like the same thing with me or you, and you've tried to address this with my family. It's like... We are the ones who won't give candy to a baby. He is giving the candy to the baby, making her happy, saying, okay, this is what you can do. I'll do this for you. I'll do that for you. Not what she needs, but
right.
what she wants.
Right, which is how to make an addict sicker. So they went to court this last time, and the judge, I thought, did an enlightened thing, right? It seemed
100%.
Like it. Yeah, it seemed like finally a judge is really looking out for Lindsay and really trying to help her and not just punish her. Because this is punishment. You were in prison. How'd that work out for you?
It doesn't. It doesn't punish you. It doesn't rehabilitate you. It makes you more angry.
Right. It doesn't help your addiction, does it?
No, absolutely. You don't address your addiction.
I mean, sometimes people do. I've seen it. You know, people find when they lose their freedom, they start looking around at what they're doing and they start.
Downey Jr. For example.
Yeah. No, Bob Forrest found recovery.
Oh, that's right. Bobby too.
But so go ahead. So the judge does something enlightened, then what happens? Why were you mad? Well, I got confused when you were mad in the courtroom because I thought, oh, boy, why are you mad? This is great. This is fantastic.
I'll tell you why. Because before we even went in the courtroom, I was called by this Gavin Doyle, Lindsay's assistant. And Gavin told me that Lindsay's lawyer, Mark Heller, called him ahead of time, had Lindsay call him, and Lindsay met with Gavin after a big falling out, and Mr. Heller was there at the meeting in New York. And he said, I don't want you, I know that they know that Lindsay was driving, but I want you to say that you reached over and grabbed the wheel to avoid the truck, and in the process, that's how the crash occurred. And in a legal sense, you would be driving the car because you were in control of the car. So I said, he told you to lie.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. So I actually went to the city attorney, and I told him what the situation was, and there was question over his competency of Mr. Heller's competency to begin with. We saw that in the public. But then they actually were going to have Lindsay decide if Mr. Heller was competent when, quite honestly, Lindsay wasn't competent. So you had one person deciding, an incompetent person deciding on another person's competency.
This is all behind the scenes. This is all very, very confusing to me.
Totally.
This is all, but all I saw was the judge saying, making a recommendation requiring, and I read it and I liked it, and then I saw you pissed off. Help me understand again why you were pissed in the courtroom.
I wasn't pissed off at that point. As a matter of fact, I'm in agreement with you, and the reason why I was so happy with the judge's order this time is because he actually said that you are not to be around people or places where drugs might be present.
Interesting.
And what happened that very night after court? She was out drinking.
Right. And so why didn't she
violate her?
Yeah.
No, they didn't violate her. I called the city attorney. I said, see what happened. She's out again. How could you give her 25 days or 45 days to get into a rehab?
Well, but Mike, you and I both know that people go out on those last hurrahs and whatever. Who gives a shit? But I heard that she was trying to delay her treatment till after Coachella. Is that just rumor or is that for real?
No, it's for real. She was trying to delay it for that reason because she was doing anger management and the David Letterman show, and she had a whole bunch of things going on that she wanted to do for her career rather than herself.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason, getting back to what you said, the reason I got so pissed off is because when I got out of the courtroom, Lindsay had left. I was in the car leaving, and there were a whole bunch of cars blocking us, and I said, can you get those cars to leave? And they said, no, Mr. Heller's given a press conference.
Yeah.
So I went back, and I stood with all the reporters, behind all of them, and I was listening to this guy about how Lindsay doesn't have an addiction problem.
That's what pissed you off, right there.
Freaked me out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, why are you still here? Why are you talking about things that you don't know? You're here for the wrong reasons. And I walked through the crowd, and he walked away from the microphone. And they asked me why I was so annoyed. I told them. And then he started his own little forum with like five people from the press. So I walked over, and now he's with that attorney that he had gotten to co-counsel with him. And the guy said to me, I said, why are you still here? And the guy said, why are you here? And yeah. That's when I lost it and started screaming. I am her father. I've been at almost every court appearance outside of the one she didn't appear at. And for someone to question why a father is there in court for his daughter is beyond anything I would ever question anyone of.
Mike, I'm going to ask you a tough question. I was just thinking of it because I've known you for a while, and I know how you feel as a dad. How does it feel when – so this is, I'm going to ask you this a tough question. How do you feel when people go, oh, Michael is just trying to capitalize on his daughter and just get attention and tech? You heard that kind of stuff go on in the press?
Yeah, they have said that.
How do you feel when people say stuff like that? What do you say to that?
At this point, it's water off a duck's back because, Dr. Drew, like right now, I'm on the show with you, and I'm not talking about me or promoting me. I'm actually there promoting something that's good. First of all, we're talking about addiction. We're talking about what affected Lindsay, what affected me. And if someone can get one thing out of what we're talking about and it'll help them in some way, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think that promoting Lukens Institute or Treasure Coast Recovery because of the program they have.
Well, let's flip to that now. Tell me about those programs. You said they're trauma-based, a lot of trauma treatment there?
Trauma-based, a lot of individual therapy. Mm-hmm. They have great group sessions. They're small core groups like we were in Celebrity Rehab. It wasn't a whole bunch of people. It wasn't like where people, 30, 40 people are sitting in a room. They have a maximum of 6 people in a group at a time. And then they actually get a lot of individual therapy.
That's where trauma works. They do EMDR and all those kinds of newer therapies too?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what we did with you. You guys gave us time. You talked to us. I never cried in front of a therapist. Mm. I never walked out of a room and purged. Mm. I mean, and look, I got to the point where I lost it with Kate. I mean, I knocked down that. I kicked the door in trying to leave.
Yeah.
You know, and here we are, the whole show. I was a peacemaker. I was trying to get it. Things were working out. And you know what? I wasn't at the point I thought I was.
Right. Well, isn't that always the way it works, though, right? Tell people about that. How do you get somebody from A to B when they think they're fine, they're good, they're under what? And somebody's saying, hey, I just remember Bob saying something to you that I thought was profound. Do you remember when you left and Bob goes, Michael, I don't know what the fuck to do with you. I don't think that went on TV, but I thought because he really wanted to help you. We really felt connected to you, but we really felt like you weren't there yet and you didn't quite see it. How do you, and I'm sure lots of people deal with family members and friends who are sort of at the same spot. How do you break through that?
You really never, never truly break through it. You have to really realize it and you have to, you have to learn to deal with it.
On your own.
Yes, yes.
You have to come to it.
Getting from A to B isn't a short journey.
Right.
I mean, it's a long and sometimes a lifetime journey.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of staying on the right path. Sure, you can step off that path. You will step off the path to some degree. But the idea is not to get lost once you walk off the path.
Well, I think I understand what you're saying when you use that sort of metaphoric euphemism. But
yes.
I think there's a piece that gets lost in not just recovery treatment, but a mental health treatment generally, is that in order to get well, you have to lead a certain kind of life. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You have to be honest. You have to be caring about people. You have to lead a certain kind of life. And people, when I always get frustrated when people talk about taking a pill to get better or we're going to cure addiction with a vaccine and stuff. No, it may help. It may reduce the biological barriers to getting it, so to speak, that we've been talking about. But ultimately, you've got to lead a certain kind of life. Do you want to speak about that?
Well, look, there's different – yeah, I'd love to. There's different ways of looking at it. I look at it from a very spiritual sense, and like, you know, my faith tells me no one is perfect. We're all sinners. You can – you know, we're not going to do everything right. I have to look at things from the perspective where good gets good and bad gets bad. And I definitely know that karma exists. There's for every action, there's a reaction. And basically, that's what keeps me on that path. I know that, you know, after trial and error so many years.
You've tried it different ways.
If I don't do the right thing, it's just not going to work out.
Right.
And that's basically, it's called your conscience. To me, it's God's voice of reason in your head saying, it always happens for everybody, but we don't realize it. And here's just a little thing that I've come to realize. If I'm angry about something for the wrong reason, if I'm thinking the wrong thing, if I have done the wrong thing in any capacity, it may be minimal. But when I open that cabinet and I bang myself in the head, or I'm walking someplace and I trip or I stub my toe, I stop and think, what was I just thinking? How was God trying to get my attention?
Mm.
So, and that's basically, it's that reminder. It's the karma that, you know, what you give is what you're going
to
get.
So let's go back to your daughter. You and I talked about the fact that there's it's really a concerning illness she has. Is she going to get treatment this time, do you think? Is that going to happen, or are they going to find some place for her where they can give her a bunch of pills like Adderall and Xanax, which have been the things that have taken her out every damn time? What's going to happen this time?
I can't believe you just said that, because you just mentioned Adderall. Will she get treatment? She's going to have to, but is she going to get it because she wants it or because she needs it?
No. Is she going to actually get – is she going to get abstinence-based treatment is my question, because I imagine your programs are abstinence-based, right? Treasure
– Yes.
I mean, when you have a real addict, somebody who's really thrown the switch on the disease, you have to stop all addictive substances, opiates, benzos, psychostimulants. That's where – and God knows Lindsay's tried it the other way. Her doctors have tried it the other way a number of times. How's that working out so far? Not so good. So it's about complete abstinence and a certain kind of life. Is she going to get that kind of treatment, or is she going to go somewhere that she has her way, you know, or her addiction has its way?
Absolutely not, and I'll tell you why. And it's been all over the place. The latest demand of Lindsay is that if she goes to treatment, she'll only go to treatment if she's allowed to take her Adderall.
There you go.
How sick is that? That's one of her biggest problems. And that's
right.
Why I like Lukens. They, like you, I don't believe in that stuff.
But, yeah, there are – and it's not about believing it or not believing it. It's just – and by the way, Adderall has very, very fine uses in very specific circumstances. She ain't one of them. And Lamictal, stabilizing mood for people with bipolar tendencies, extremely important. No effect on addiction except positive effect on addiction.
Exactly.
But these things have to be selected in a very sophisticated way. I'm not saying – and just doesn't Lindsay's history inform anybody who's treating her that the Adderall, not such a great idea. Not such a great
no.
idea at all.
And you know, quite frankly, I consider you out of – and I'm not just blowing smoke up your butt. I'm not doing this. I've said it 1,000 times, and I consider you one of the best therapists or the best addiction specialists or the best people to treat other people. And only because I've tried everything, and I've been to so many, I've looked at so many programs, none of them work except if they follow your kind of model. And that's why I'm so involved here, because it is like your model.
Yes. No, I can tell. That's why I figured that. I'm not surprised. And the one piece that gets left out, and you're absolutely right about this, Michael, which is the trauma piece. And trauma, if you're going to get real addiction, like the kind that you need to see me, or referred to one of Michael's program, you had trauma, for sure. It's sort of the rocket fuel behind addiction. It's what causes people to throw that final switch that loses control. And if you bring the addiction under control, sometimes that is enough, just the 12-step, just addiction treatment. But oftentimes people struggle with that, and oftentimes it's because the trauma piece is not managed. So there's literally a part of the brain that's still just like churning. And as you said – You talked like a trauma survivor a little while ago when I mentioned – I talked about you stabbing your dad with a broomstick. And you said, well, I dealt with that. I didn't think about that. And that's where trauma goes. It gets stuffed in a drawer. And it sits there walled off from the rest of your emotions, churning. Mm-hmm. Outside of consciousness, outside of direct wiring. You don't have a wiring into that part of your brain, but it affects your body. It affects your moods. It affects your desire to use. And unless that – hooks up, unless you wire back into that stuff, sort of find a way to reconnect with those feelings, re-experience them, re-regulate them, they will sit there and cause you trouble. And in order for people to get to that spot, and this is – I'm coming back around to what you were saying, Michael. In order to get to the point where you can get at those kinds of experiences, you have to have a very safe, secure, and intense attachment to another person. And that's what takes time. And that's the part you're describing at your facilities, which is why I'm excited about those places.
Well, I'd really like you to, you know, just – take a real good look at it and see what it's about.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not saying go there. I've looked in them. I'm not saying I'm A, not getting paid for these places, B, cannot officially endorse them.
No.
But you're there. You wanted to bring them up. I'm fine with that. And they sound like the kinds of places that are good. They sound – and there's a lot of good recovery programs in Florida, interestingly. I don't know why that's happening, but there's some decent places. Kate went somewhere pretty good, didn't she?
No.
Ooh.
Absolutely not. No, because you can – no, because when she got out, it was only a week, and she relapsed. And if it wasn't for her getting arrested and having a bunch of charges over her head, which she's still addressing now, if it wasn't for the legal ramifications and because she got pregnant, I don't think she'd be okay. But she is a totally different person. Since she got pregnant, she quit smoking that day when she found out. Literally.
Are you with Kate now, or are you guys together?
Yes.
Okay.
No, we're together. Yeah. I could never walk away from her or my child. She would fall apart. Mm. And my son is, I mean, I want to eat him up from the minute I wake up until I go to work and when I get home.
How is your relationship now with your older kids?
What relationship?
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that. Are they resentful that you have a new son?
No, they never brought that up. It's just what Dina has done, and I don't even want to, you know, I don't want to stab Dina, but she, it's a problem that for all the kids as well as Lindsay, and I'm not saying all the kids aren't going to have to deal with in some capacity down the line, but Lindsay was affected the most. You cannot alienate your kids from the parents. When a spouse and spouses have a problem, you keep it between yourself.
What would Dina say is the problem with Michael?
Oh, it's always financial. That's the only thing.
You're not paying your fair share or whatever.
I paid everything.
But that's what she would say. That's what she would say.
Oh yeah. No, I mean I have texts on my phone from yesterday, and you know, in my divorce, I gave her the house, gave her everything, gave her her bank accounts, everything. I even my half of the bank account, and she owed me $100,000, and I had a judgment for money she owed me. I never executed it. She wanted money for child support. They take it out of my check every single week.
What would your kids say is the problem with Michael?
They know about it, but she
no, 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 no. I get Dina. I get where her head's at. And by the way, we kind of always skate around the fact that you guys had a pretty traumatic situation there where you got in a big fight when you were loaded. And did you beat up her brother or something?
Her brother.
I don't think she ever got over that.
I wasn't loaded. I caught him smoking crack. It was at my son's communion party.
Well, whatever it was, I don't think she ever got over that.
And that's the biggest part. And here's the reason why. And this is why, and it's really interesting because this is why she does it to me. It's learned behavior. When I had the fight with her brother and she filed the divorce papers, the reason she did is her parents said to her, and she told me, either it's you or it's my family, and I'm not going to give up my family. Mm. You can still have a relationship with the kids, but I don't like, you know, it's too much water under the bridge, and I can't do this.
What would the kids say is up with their dad? What is their beef with you?
I'm too vocal, that it's the money thing. You don't take care of Cody like you should. I give them everything they need, but Dean is telling him this. Well, that's why it's so sad, but every time I send her money, I take a picture of the check or the money order, the wire, and I send it to the kids. How pathetic is that?
But interestingly, you have a relationship with Lindsay, right? She's the one you actually have a relationship with?
Oh, yes. Always. Whenever she has a problem, even now, she contacts
me. But she won't listen to you?
No.
That's got to be very painful. I mean, I listen, my son was sick a couple weeks ago, and it was my anxiety levels went off the chain. If my kid also had addiction, I would be losing it all the time, especially now that you understand more how this thing works and what it is and the nuances around it. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. How do you manage?
I have to manage, but I always sleep, you know, in a sense, with one eye open. I mean, I keep thinking back to the day I was in prison and people came to me with the New York Post with Lindsay passed out in the front seat of the car. I thought she was dead. Mm-hmm. I saw that picture. My first reaction was my daughter. They had a picture of Lindsay passed out in the front seat of the car with Samantha Ronson. You know, obviously, I don't know if she took the picture or not. But, I mean, I keep referring back to that. Thank God she didn't die. Or the night I got a call from the Chateau Marmont that she overdosed and her doctor went up there instead of addressing her. He took all the pills with his name on it and got rid of it before he treated her.
See, I think she becomes like people get very strange about people in the press, and they become almost like not human beings. They become sort of cartoon characters that they like to kind of talk about. This is your daughter. This is your little girl. And people just don't give you that, I don't think. Do you?
Yeah.
And that's painful. That's got to be crazy.
I mean, really. And you know what? Look, Cody's not doesn't have those kind of problems. Neither does Allie or Michael. Not that, you know, at this point in time.
Right.
But there's a lot of pain involved in all of this because of what Lindsay's gone through. And you know what? I take responsibility for all of it because I'm the one who beat up Dina's brother. Could I have stopped and not hit him? Yeah, I had that choice. And I made the wrong one, and it affected me for the rest of my life.
And so you blame yourself for Lindsay's circumstance, Lindsay's struggles.
I have to own up to my part of it, and that's what started it.
You need to go to some Al-Anon meetings, my friend.
Huh? Yeah, and I don't.
Yeah,
I know. I think God can solve everything.
And, well, he can help, but you and your mom need to go to some Al-Anon meetings. They're there for a reason.
Yeah, we're kind of attached to the hip in that sense, I guess.
I know. I get that. And it's fascinating. It's interesting that the way it manifests in your family. And I just know when children are not well, parents suffer. You know, they always say you're only as happy as your least happy child, and you're no different. And I know it's got to be tough. And you're by yourself too. It's not like you and Dean are together worrying about this. You're sort of in different.
But I want to be together. I want to be together in a sense. At least I just want us both. And you know, I've been fighting for this. I want to be on the same page. I want.
Well, it would help. It would help Lindsay. Right?
All the kids, but Lindsay, yeah, absolutely, Lindsay, but yeah, all the kids. Yeah. How do you think Lindsay felt? You want to talk about isolation and being alone and be put in a position? Me being at the house with Lindsay in Venice and Dina calling up when I'm having bagels with Lindsay and Dina hears that I'm at the house and she says, if Daddy doesn't leave the house, you're not going to see Allie and Cody.
Mm. That was what, like a year ago, year and a half ago?
Yeah, a year and a half ago, but recently too. I mean, Gavin Doyle and Klaus Heimzick and all Lindsay's people would tell me that Dina would say, look, if you have anything to do with your dad, you're not seeing your brother and sister, you're not welcome at the house.
And would she ever tell you why she was so adamant about you not being around her? Would Dina tell you to stay away from her?
No. She was just like, do the right thing and you'll see your kids. And I do the right
thing. Which is money.
And after
That's
I
money.
Do it, then.
That's money, yeah. All right, Michael, here's what I want to do. I want to take a quick break, and then you and I are going to take some calls. We've got a bunch of little sort of mental health and substance calls, and you and I will reach out a little bit, okay?
That'd be great.
And I appreciate being so honest and straightforward. Again, one of the things I like about podcasting is you get the whole story out, and I think people who come to these podcasts sit and listen. They want to hear the whole story. And the story the person is having, the life you're leading – is different than, you know, what you see on TMZ and the press, and I don't know, I'm really concerned about the way press is consumed and the way we sort of stand together and just like sacrifice humans in the press.
You know what? And that's why it bothered me with regard to Celebrity Rehab and some of the people that were on the show. You know what? None of that was fake. It wasn't staged. It was all real.
Yeah.
People learned from it. You saw the 100% honest God truth. And then when you look at the ratio of people that have passed on from other treatment programs and people want to pick on you or that show, which was helpful because millions of people learned from us on that show.
I hope so. And Rodney had a heart attack. I can't do anything about that. So, you know, there were people that died of other conditions, and we still get blamed for that. And
look, they don't talk about Jeremy Jackson, who's actually coming here to visit me next month. They don't talk about – I talk to Sean all the time.
Sean Young?
Doing great.
Oh, you tell her hi from me? I love Sean Young. She is a really magnificent person. Is she okay?
100% okay.
Right.
Amy Fisher lives right down the block from me. She's 1,000% okay.
Wow. Please say hi. Amy, somebody brought up to me the other day, and I was like, I haven't thought about Amy. She's the one that I really have had zero contact with since treatment. And people can reach out to me. I'm happy to be of help to them if they –
You know why? Because when they're okay, they're not going to reach out to me.
Yeah, well, that's good news. I'm fine with that. That's all great. Okay, listen, we'll take this break, and then we will come back and take some calls. So back with Michael Lohan. Before we come back, though, a reminder that the Corolla flagship here, the pirate ship, needs to be kept afloat. So click through at the Amazon banner at drdrew.com. Does not cost you a thing, but keeps the pirate ship afloat here. People have been Twittering me about some of the things they've been doing, and we should actually compile a list and say thank you to people on their Twitter handles and stuff that do that, because it does allow us to keep doing this thing. And as you all know, Corolla has a tendency to fire people that don't pull their weight, including his own family. So be right back after this.
Hey everyone, it's me, Allison Rosen. This week on Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend, I sat down with Harlan Williams, and we talked about hockey, Canada, marionettes, marriage, earthquakes, noodles, and then I revealed a secret fantasy. Because I used to watch Sound of Music all the time, like I would have fucking killed someone to be a Von Trapp.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had a turtle named Liesl.
Was that one of the Von Trapp kids?
The eldest daughter, yeah, Liesl.
Oh, the one who was 16 going on 17?
That's right, that's the one.
You are 16 going on 17, baby. You haven't changed.
Look at you.
Da, 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 da,
yeah, so was your family like the Von Trapps?
You mean did we hide in German graveyards at night?
Yes.
Yes.
Subscribe to Allison Rosen as Your New Best Friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. I love you.
Allison's your new best friend.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Drew Podcast. I'm here with Michael Lohan. He is working with the Lukens Institute at lukensinstitute.com, L-U-K-E-N-S, institute.com, and Treasure Coast Recovery Center. These are, I'm led to believe, abstinence-based programs that do a lot of good trauma treatment. Michael vouches for them, and I am all for programs that, if indeed that's their what they do and do well, that's the model that I adhere to. Michael, let's take some calls. This is Emily from San Francisco. Emily, go ahead.
Hi. So I'm calling because I've been diagnosed as bipolar and also as having generalized anxiety disorder with depression. It's happened like two or three times back and forth. I'll go to a new doctor and they always want to diagnose me as bipolar. And then when I spend more time with people, then they usually come back to the generalized anxiety with depression.
Mm-hmm. Well, you called the right guys. I have generalized anxiety disorder, and Michael has bipolar. So between us, we should be able to figure this out. Michael, you want to take a crack at this?
I think you should first.
Okay. I would say it sounds like you've not had therapy, like you've not really spent time with a clinician. And go ahead.
I haven't spent a lot of time with one therapist until the last almost 2 years now. I have been seeing one therapist, one psychologist.
For how long?
For almost 2 years. It's close to 2 years.
How often?
Once a week.
Okay. All right. And what is
my question?
Yeah. And what does he or she think?
So she thinks she definitely leans towards the generalized anxiety. Like that's what she always had thought until recently. I had a kind of crazy thing.
What happened?
I wasn't sleep. I was having trouble sleeping. Actually, it started with me trying to get back on medicine.
What medicine?
I hadn't been on medicine. And
what medicine?
They put me on Paxil.
Okay.
And I just started spiraling out of control, wasn't sleeping. I had some Ambien that had been prescribed a while ago. I took one of those, still didn't sleep. So then, like, paranoia started, like, even, you know, 12 hours after I had taken it, I was still having the paranoia, and I had some auditory hallucinations. So that's really complicated.
So you became manic from a medication, right?
That's how I would interpret it, yes.
And
who prescribed you the medication? A doc? Who?
Yeah, I've been having a lot of trouble.
Well, you didn't answer. Who prescribed you the medication? How long did you see the person before they gave you the medication?
Probably 15 minutes, Mike.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
How can you diagnose someone who's got problems for years after meeting them 15 minutes?
Well, I mean, that's what psychiatrists are trained to do, is to make a diagnostic impression. It's like, you know, like saying, what if somebody comes with a complicated musculoskeletal problem they've been struggling with for years, and all of a sudden, you know, you try to make a stab at it. But the point is taken, and so she develops mania from the meds. So the question is that purely a medication effect, an untoward medication effect, or have they now uncovered a bipolar condition that never would have expressed itself had she not been exposed to that medication? It's sort of a moot point. You had a manic episode, it's from medication. You're better with you're being treated for anxiety and depression and getting therapy. I wouldn't worry about your bipolar so much. I would just be very careful with any antidepressant medicines and be sure if you ever need to take one again, you take it with a mood stabilizer. That's all.
Right. Or alcohol. Right. Do you drink any alcohol at all when you're on this medication?
When I was on the alcohol?
Yeah.
I did. There's like one night where I went out with my boyfriend and drank like – I don't know. I never drink very much.
All right. So I don't get the sense this is an addiction thing so much, Michael. I think it's more just, you know, it's she needs to keep going with the therapy. The therapy is probably going to be the big thing for her. Sarah, what's up? Sarah?
Hi. Dr. Drew, thanks for all you do. I think you're fabulous.
Thank you.
My question, when I was younger, about 14, 15, I was really heavily into drugs. And gratefully, my parents put me into a treatment center for adolescents. It was residential.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in treatment for about a year and a half and didn't do drugs, was great all through high school, all through college, did my undergrad, all that. And then I turned 21 and, you know, had a drink, whatever. And it's never really been a problem since then. And then a couple years ago, I started smoking pot, just casually, basically. And as of maybe a year ago, I started smoking pretty regularly. I mean, in comparison, I started to smoke maybe two or three times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I I don't know if it's an addiction. I mean, if that's what it is, or I just don't know if I'm going to be an addict.
Are you drinking also?
Not really. I don't really like to drink. I don't drink very often.
And
maybe twice a month.
Is there alcoholism? Is alcoholism or addiction in your family?
Yes, my father's an alcoholic and a drug addict.
Okay, so you've got the gene, and you've expressed it. You've thrown the switch once already in your life, which means it's always sitting there, ready to roll again. And now you're starting to rock it once again. So it will continue. It's a progressive condition. So as long as you're tickling that part of the reward system, it will progress for sure.
You know what? And there's a pretty good example. I don't, Sarah, I don't know if you saw the show Celebrity Rehab, but and I'm not going to mention the name.
I've seen all of
Dr.
them.
But Dr. Drew, there was one person on a show that had a horrible, horrible opiate addiction
mm-hmm.
and then had switched over to pot and was mm-hmm. smoking pot.
Mm-hmm.
And it became so unmanageable for him. It got really bad.
Yeah, well, it does. It's not for everybody that happens, but for some people, like opiates, like anything else, it's not addictive for everybody. But for some people, it really gets it going. I'm not even sure Sarah, you're a cannabis addict, but I am sure you're rolling towards a drug. You're on your way. You're moving towards mm-hmm. a drug of choice. I bet you could stop weed now if you stopped.
Right.
You really have to stop the process here, though, which is, you know, your addiction is active. And whatever sort of motivating you to reach outside of your body to try to regulate emotions, whether it's just that you want to get high or it's that something's bugging you, you got to stop. Or you're going to have to do something very active to address it, like a 12-step program.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
Good luck. We're here. If you need us, just, you know. I don't want to bum your high, but help, this is the way to do it, okay?
Right.
All right,
okay.
Sir.
Well,
good luck.
Thank you so much.
All right, sure thing. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's a tough one, Mike, coming up. His name is also Mike. Mike is in Connecticut. Mike, what's going on? Oh, did we lose him? Mike,
no,
are you there?
I'm here.
We had another Mike. I had another Michael. Mike in Connecticut, are you there? Oh, he's gone. He was a heroin addict. It was a good one. Let's go to this is a little... Is this Chris? Is that what that says there? Chris, Chris, what's up?
Hi. Not at all drug related. And
all right, that's all right.
Taking my call.
Go ahead.
My little brother is 12 years old, and I know at this age, you know, a little arrogance and self-centeredness is expected from that age. But the way he's going, it's completely narcissistic, completely arrogant about everything. And I'm just wondering, as an older brother who's no longer living in the home, is there anything I can do to curb this?
Well, let me ask you, has he had any trauma? Did he have any physical abuse or anything that sort of set him on this path?
No, I mean, he's had a great childhood.
No one ever picked up an object and hit him?
Well, I mean, spanked as a child, I mean.
With an object?
Not that I know of, okay. Just with a hand
out. Okay. Because when you hit a child with an object, you're sort of crossing into a zone that we know affects the brain development differently, and it can set up for things like narcissism because of the trauma. If it's not trauma-related, I always worry about the moms. And it's a little boy that's sort of becoming narcissistically inclined. How is his mom in terms of her parenting style?
that's touching.
Is she very permissive?
Idealizing,
permissive, that kind of thing.
No, what do you mean by idealizing?
Like this, he can do no wrong. And I don't know if you heard the podcast I did with, I'm blanking on our buddy's name from Laguna Beach.
Jason Waller.
Jason Waller. And he had this kind of thing with his mom. He said when, as a kid, he talked about being severely entitled and narcissistic. And his mom, he couldn't do no wrong. He was perfect. And he was, you know, whatever he did, it was beautiful and glorious, and he was beating up other kids, and must have been the other kids' fault. And he took advantage of other kids, and their mom applauded, sort of colluding unintentionally in this kid's narcissistic development. Is there anything like that going on?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely favoritism in that everything he does is great, but she's also quick to drop the line, you know, if you don't do this, you'll amount to nothing. I mean, stuff along that line.
I don't know. Chris, Michael, back me up on this, but I think all you can do is be a good role model and spend more time with him. I think that and do pull his chain as hard as you can in terms of getting him to address reality on reality's terms. Michael?
Yes, I agree. I mean, the role model part, I've had some difficulty with that at times. But
what do you mean?
Well, you know, I made decisions, like when I went to California and I knew I shouldn't have gone. Was that a great decision? No. I wound up in jail. I knew better. You know, beating up my brother-in-law. Was that being a good role model? No, absolutely not. I think there's a lot of things that we have to own up to. And you know what, like Dr. Drew said, you have to really, really look into the past. And you said you don't think there was any kind of physical abuse, hit with an object, things like that. There's got to be something there because this man, and like we were talking about trauma, how important it is to resolve it, whether it's the program they use here at the Lukens Institute or Dr. Drew's method of helping people, you have to dig deep. You really have to dig deep. And if you do that, you can definitely help your brother, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, that ability to form intimate bonds and be really closely attuned and connected to other people. It's a part that, you know, I try to talk about in this podcast all the time, and it's something that has been lost in our culture. Relationships are not important in this time in our country, and they are exquisitely important for our health, well-being, and happiness. And we've lost track of that completely.
Yeah. That caused a lot of issues, absolutely.
Yeah, yep. Thank you, Chris, for that call. A reminder that the Jason Waller episode is episode 20 if you want to hear my conversation with him. Did you ever meet Jason, Mike, Jason Waller?
No, I didn't.
The
no,
kid is doing never. Amazing, 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 amazing. He's like you. He's working in the field now and stuff and just phenomenal, just an inspiration. Well, Michael, that about brings us to a close here. Anything you want to say in closing?
Same as I say all the time, as I thank you for helping me, and I still have work to do in my life, of course, but you've helped me, you know, use what I've learned to help other people. And I may not be the best person in the world, but you gave me some tools where I can put them out there and help people. And that's why I found, you know, the Lukens Institute and Treasure Coast Recovery, because they work off your model.
Great. Well, I hope they help people and I hope people find them useful. And the website, lukeninstitute.com, treasurecoastrecovery.com. I will take a look at that to make sure that they, you know, I agree with every, you know, I hope they're abstinence-based because that's really.
They are.
Know, these 100%. Days, I refer to like three programs in the country and that's it because I know they're abstinence-based. And I also know they're sophisticated. You have to be careful. I mean, when you're abstinence-based, I'm not saying
don't ever use any medication, because no, I'm saying being medically very sophisticated, use medicines in a very sophisticated way, but have abstinence as the priority. Michael, thank you very much. Michael J, at Michael J. Lohan is the Twitter handle. I appreciate you coming on, buddy. And good luck with, I know what you're contending with. I see it. I know how you suffer with it. I've talked to Dina a couple times and worry, you know, that she's sort of, you know, must be miserable too with all this. It must be very deeply concerning to everybody.
You have to be sober yourself in order to help people.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, put the mask over your own mask, own mouth before you try to help anybody else. That's the saying. But
and you lead by example, and you know, nothing for nothing. You've tried to help my family a number of times.
And you might want to spend a little time in Al-Anon, my friend. I'm just saying, just saying. And then maybe someday you, me, and Bob will get on the phone together, and we'll just chat about how things are going. Michael,
then you'll
Lohan.
Pat me on the back.
That's
when I get.
Well, Bob, God, how do you deal with this guy? How do we deal with Michael? What are we going to do with him?
Well, listen, nothing for nothing. You will always answer my calls. Whenever I have a problem, you're still there.
Fair
and
enough.
I give you that.
Happy to be there. Thank you, Michael. Michael Lohan, and thank you all for listening and watching and calling. Reminder, click through at the Amazon banner at doctor.com. Keep the pirate ship afloat. Check out the Adam and Dr. Drew show as well. And thank you for listening to these podcasts. See you next time.
This is Corolla Digital.